This week's parsha, Parsha Vayishlach, deals with the reconciliation between Yaakov Avinu and Esav, where Yaakov prepares himself for this meeting in three levels: through gifts, through prayer, and through preparation for war. We have the actual meeting between the two brothers, and as the Torah tells us, Vayishakehu, Esav kisses Yaakov with a das on the word, which either means he really kissed him out of full love, or rather it means that at that moment he wanted to really bite off his neck, but God made his neck into steel, whatever that means, and he was unable to harm him. So we have the parting of Yaakov and Esav. The parsha then continues with the abduction of Dinah and with Shimon and Levi coming to the rescue and the honor of their sister and destroying the whole city. It's interesting to note that although they are rebuked for doing this in the bracha of Yaakov Avinu and Parshas Vayechi, nonetheless, on the flag in the desert of Shimon's flag is the city of Shechem. So even though they're rebuked for doing it, there is some type of symbol of honor by the fact of what they did do. The parsha then concludes with the birth of Binyamin, the death of Rachel Imenu, and the list of the Alufim, the list of the generals of Esav. One aspect of the parsha, which I did not mention in the overview, which I want to deal with today, more of a more famous aspect, the last couple of weeks we've been dealing with more of a off-the-beaten track, and that is the night before the meeting between Yaakov and Esav, something very strange and very important occurs, and that is the battle of the angel, this man, with Yaakov Avinu. Let's take a look at the verse, source number one, 25th verse in chapter 32. Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. When he perceived that he could not overcome him, he struck the socket of his hip. So Jacob's hip socket was dislocated as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for dawn has broken." And then the Torah continues in the section, as we are familiar, that the Jewish people do not eat of this hip bone, this sinew, in an animal, the Gid HaNasha, as we call it, until today. And then the end of the section deals with that Yaakov Avinu says, "I'm not going to let you go until you bless me." And he blesses him by changing his name. And the name change is confirmed later in our Parsha in Beit El, where his name is changed from Yaakov to Yisrael. And as the Torah tells us, "Ki sarita im Elokim v'im anashim v'tuchal," that you struggled with angels and with men, and you prevailed. So I'd like to ask a number of questions on this section to try to deal with today. The first question is, what is the symbolism? What lesson can we learn from this struggle? As is noted in source number 2, Rashi brings down that the angel, this man, that wrestled with Yaakov Avinu was none other than the Sarul Shel Esav, the angel of Esav, which we understand by our rabbis is the concept of the Satan, the concept of the devil himself, whatever that means. But on the most simplest level, this is not just a battle between Yaakov and a man, it's a battle between Yaakov and Esav and what everything that Esav represents. As is noted in source number 2, based on the article Stone Chumash, it's really a cosmic battle. It's a battle that has implications for Dorei Doros, for generations until today, of this battle. So the question I'd like to understand, question number 1, is what is the nature of this battle? What lesson can we derive from our lives of the battle that happened then, how it impacts us till today? The second question I'd like to ask is, what is the significance of the fact that we do not eat of the Gid HaNasha in an animal? So very nice, so Yaakov got injured at that part of the body, but that's why we don't eat a Gid HaNasha, we don't eat that part of the animal till today. What seems to be the connection between the two? And the third question is, why only now does Yaakov Avinu get his name changed from Yaakov to Yisrael? What was it about this battle? What was it about this event that this seems to be the pivotal event that he's now given this name change unlike any other event in his life? What is the significance of this event? And what is the significance of the name Yisrael that he should be given this name at this point? So three basic questions on this story. The approach I'd like to take this morning to understand this section, I believe, is based on one word in our pasuk. And this one word and the understanding of this one word, I feel, gives us a whole insight into what the battle between Yaakov and this man was about and the battle between the Jew and the outside world today is all about. One word. And the one word that we need to understand so deeply. What is this one word? The one word is, in the first pasuk we dealt with, Yaakov was left alone. Vayivater Yaakov livado. Alone. Yes, we know it means physically he was alone. He transported his whole family to the other side and now no one's with him. I understand that that's what it means. But we don't need to know that. There must be a reason why the Torah is stressing that it was Vayivater Yaakov levado, when Yaakov was left alone, Vayavek ishimo adalot hashachar, that the person struggled with him until the morning. There was something about the aloneness, the levadoness, that created this struggle, that was the reason for this struggle. So what I'd like to do today is to do a study on what the word levado means and the significance of levado. So the beginning of this study, I'd like to look at a medrash, which is brought in source number 3 in the Kol Torah. Rabbi Monk brings this medrash in English. Rabbi Shimon, however, gives this verse a symbolic meaning. The words Vayivater Yaakov Levado, and Yaakov was left alone, echo the words of the prophet Viniskav Hashem Levado. Again, the word Levado is used by God. God alone will be exalted. The comparison is based on the analogy of God reigning over the universe and Jewry residing among the nations. According to the verse in Deuteronomy 33:26, Ein kakel yishurun, there is none like the Almighty except Yishurun Yisrael. Just like God is unique and alone and exalted, so too Yisrael among the nations of the world remain unique. Am levadad yishkon. So the Medrash, as Rabbi Monk brings it down, is making a comparison between God, who is levado, alone, exalted, to the Jewish people, who are alone, exalted. Rabbi Rucham Alevi, in Das Torah, explains this medrash on a much more particular level, and explains that the concept of levado is not only referring to the Jewish people, but more specifically, and I'd like to deal with more specifically, at least at the beginning of this year, about Yaakov Avinu in particular. That just like God is levado, so too Yaakov Avinu had this quality of levado. What is this quality? So Rabbi Rucham explains in source 4, he says toward the bottom, Aval yesh od midah shel levado, there's this quality of God called levado. We know, says Rabbi Rucham, that God has many qualities. And oftentimes in life, God will use emissaries, he'll use shlichim, he'll use people to help him accomplish, kivyachol, a task that he needs done, whether it's angels, whether it's people. So oftentimes God will use other people to accomplish whatever needs to be accomplished. Levado is a different element, a different midah, a different quality of God. Ubamidah ha'hi ha'kol ba, and in this midah it's an all-inclusive quality. And he continues by saying, "Banhagat hamidah ha'hi kvar ein shum sorech v'lo hiztakut la'ezer kol shehu mezulato." This quality does not need help from anybody else. As he quotes the famous tefillah, we say, "Adon Olam, God who's the master of the world, Asher Malach, when he ruled, b'terem kol yitzir nivra, he ruled before any creation was around. And then v'acharei kichol takol, when everything's said and done, levado yimloch nara, he will rule alone as well." What does levado mean? Yechidi, alone. Levado b'tachlit, the klum lo chaser, not lacking anything. Being able to be, as we could say this about God, self-sufficient. Not needing anybody else. Being complete. Levado means I do not need to rely on anybody else. I don't need anyone else to help me. It is the midah, the quality, where everything is included in this quality. It's this quality of exaltedness, uniqueness, where one can stand really on one's 2 feet. It says Rabbi Rucham, that's exactly the quality that Yaakov Avinu personifies in our story when the angel comes to wrestle with him. Vayivater Yaakov levado, explains Rabbi Rucham, is to show the quality of Yaakov Avinu, that he had this ability to be levado, he had this ability to emulate God in being alone, in being unique, in not needing anyone but himself. But what does this mean on a practical level? What does this levado mean? What does it mean not to need anybody else, to be all-inclusive? How can we as an individual emulate this midah of God? So I'd like to try to understand on a philosophical level, and then at the end we'll try to work it through on a practical level, is what does the concept of levado, the concept of self, mean? What is this all about? And I'd like to do this with Rabbi Kagan's book, The Jewish Self. And I'd like to go through, an appropriate title, I'd like to go through working through a number of theses in this book, I think that will define for us what the concept of levado, the concept of self, is all about. We begin in source 6, where he gives us, I think, one of the best definitions of the battle that a person goes through every day and a description of what we look like on any given day. He says, and I quote, "The unrefined self is a mass of inclinations, each pulling in their own direction, with a confused center traveling among them. That center alights upon whichever inclination is stronger at that moment and thinks it is home, wrongfully assuming that these inclinations are primary aspects of self. The unrefined self sees itself as several selves." And I think this is such an apt description of our lives. I want to be involved in this project right now, so I put my whole self in that project. So I am defining myself as self in this project. Then I get distracted by this, and now I put my efforts into this area, so I've now defined myself about that. And then I go into a third thing, and my whole day is really made up of called fragment self, where I really don't know who I really am, but I know that I want to be involved in this and this and this and this. So I put my intentions in each one of these areas, and wherever I put my attention into, that's like a magnet, so then I define myself by that which I am doing. The true self, continuing in 6, is unitary. Man was created in the tselem, or the image of the Creator. The pure inner self is one, just as the Creator is one. Only through intense refinement can we arrive at that true unitary self. This process of purification is identical with understanding the world in a quote-unquote personally objective sense. For the purified self is in the image of the Creator. And I think this really defines, and we'll develop this idea now, what levado means. Levado means having one self, having one focal point in life, and being able to balance one's life with the understanding of being a centered person. And this concept reflects God, who is one, and allows us to connect with the Tselem Elohim, the godly nature within us. How do we access this concept of self, of oneness that's found within us? What is this all about? So he explains that we really need to understand what life is all about and the challenges that we go through. What allows a person to become a person? What creates the element that makes us a human being? So we're all familiar that the answer to that question is what we call Bechira Chofshi, free choice. That's what distinguishes us as an individual from animals. So he explains in Source 7, to put the need for free choice in existential terms, a basic aspect of humanity lies in our need to sense that we belong to ourselves. We acquire ourselves by building it through decisions and actions. We can never achieve the sense of self-ownership on any meaningful level so long as our decisions and actions are reactions, however complex and sophisticated, to our environment. Our capacity for free choice is our deepest essence. If we only react, we fail to exercise that free choice. Our center remains a potential which has never been actualized or acquired. Without a true decision, even our actions are not really from ourselves, and so are not completely our actions. We fail to acquire any aspect of ourselves. We are left with a gnawing sense of emptiness regarding our own selfhood. To be a person means not to react, but to act. And that's what the concept of responsibility is about, the ability to respond. The ability to look around us and make choices and understand the choices that we make. If we're just going to be a reactive type of person, not an active type of person, so we're not utilizing this concept of free choice, and if we're not utilizing this concept of free choice, we do not have the ability to develop the concept of I, the concept of self, the concept of the individual. And that's why he says, continuing, if self is synonymous with choice, it follows that our experience of life is not true being because it is a gift. Rather, experience, by providing a medium in which to make choices, is an opportunity to create being. for our humanity is defined only by how we choose to use that experience, not by the experience itself. And that's why you find, for example, in the description of how man was created in the Torah, so the pasuk tells us that God says, Na'aseh Adam b'tzalmenu kidmutenu, let us create man in our image. The same question all the commentators ask is, hold on a second, what do you mean in our image? God is one. How can it be the plural? So one response that's brought down among the commentators is exactly this concept. It's as if God is turning to that lump of clay and says, Na'aseh Adam, let us make man. You, the individual, and I, God, together we will create man. What does this mean? It means God says, I will give you experiences, I will give you opportunities in life, but that's not who you are. That's the given. Who you are is Na'aseh Adam. Now, what do you make with those experiences? What do you do with everything that I've given you? How have you been able to integrate them consciously, making the decisions that now can be called your own, and now that can be called self? That's the Na'aseh Adam. That's what life is all about. Life is about making decisions and utilizing those decisions to gain a sense of self and a sense of what we are about as an individual, this concept of levado. So what are the different decisions that we make in life? What are the arenas that we struggle with, that we have to define our selfhood based on these decisions? So Rabbi Kagan continues in source 9 that there are basically, as we know, 3 or 4 major categories that pull our attention on any given day, and it's these areas that we need to be able to harness in order to have a sense of a balanced self. And these areas are the area for physical desire that we desire in this world, the intellectual desire in order to fulfill that quest that we have, as well as the desire for power, the desire to conquer. And these are the different aspects of a person's soul. In Kabbalistic terms, would be nefesh, ruach, neshama. These are all the different aspects that a person has that are all vying for our attention. Clearly, what we need to understand is that a person needs to be able to take all these aspects and to balance them in a well-balanced person. And he continues in source 10, and he says, we achieve our humanity when our self comes to understand and experience itself as an expression of the divine root, and becomes a platform to give that root expression. This is attained only through an active process of development. For through the course of life, we are constantly faced with various internal forces, which we just mentioned, which tend to distort our self-understanding. The untamed physical aspect, sense of individuality, and intellect, each have an inclination to dominate and define the self, rather than be confined to their appropriate places within the larger whole. Although as a part, each of these facets is a necessary element of our humanity, as a definition of the whole, each is a perversion. So if I would spend my whole life in any one of these three areas, so I'm not living myself. I'm living a perversion of one of these areas. The fourth aspect of self cannot be overly dominant, for it is the self. So the other three areas, the area of the power, the area of intellect, the area of the physical desires, have the potential to overwhelm a person, to overcome a person, that all they see is this area, and you have what we call a lopsided sense of self. It can be an all-consuming aspect. The fourth aspect of a person is the aspect to put all of these three aspects together, and that's the concept of self. That's the deepest part of a person, and then through that part of understanding self, you then become a platform of seeing godliness within you. He says, however, there's a danger with this fourth aspect where the arrow is intent. The fourth aspect, the self, which understands in the appropriate place the other three aspects, cannot be over-dominant, for it is the self. This aspect, however, has the opposite problem. It can become weak and begin to disappear, in which case our connection to a divine root, which is accessed only through the self phase. But feeble self remains, becomes isolated, in the raw sense of autonomous individuality, and we lose all sense of our own inner depth. First three can overwhelm a person, can take a person out of perspective. The fourth, which is the ability of levado, of self, of understanding how all of them fit into the place in the correct perspective, has the problem is that if you're not going to put things in the correct perspective, so that elements within us of being able to be a centered and balanced person can lose its weight, if you're not going to feed it, and you're not going to give it priority in your life, so it's just going to disappear. And if it disappears, and you're going to live just an unbalanced life, it's not just a question you live an unbalanced life. What you're really doing is losing your connection, the platform, as he terms it, in order to reach a divine root. Because it's only through being a balanced person and seeing things in perspective that you have the ability then to connect to God. It's the oneness, it's the levado within us that allows us to see the levado, the oneness of God. And that's why he says in 11 through 15, just to summarize, he says this is our challenge in each and every one of these areas, is to be able to put it into perspective and not to be overly consumed by each and every one of these areas. They're important. They need to be attended to, but they need to be attended to in perspective. And that's why, to sum up this idea in 16, this true self stands beyond the physical aspect, the sense of autonomy, and the intellect. It is the undefinable I, quote unquote, which arises from the divine root expressing itself through all of these elements. Though we experience individuality through the sense of autonomy alone, a true I, which is definitive of the totality of our being, comes only when the autonomous awareness provides a focus for a larger sense of being. In its full and proper form, that self is experienced as a platform for the expression of a connection which stretches beyond individual identity. Though this quote-unquote I stretches beyond our individuality, there is no sense of loss of self, for this transcending connection is the basis of self. The self exists only as the means by which this connection can take on individual existence. On the contrary, only because the self connects to a transcendent realm beyond causality does it have capacity for free choice, which is a definitive of selfhood. Since we were created to express spirit into the physical realm, the content of this true I is an overwhelming desire to bring meaning into the world. So what I think we've seen until this point, before we move on, is that the concept of levado means to be a balanced person, that you have perspective in life, that you have a sense of who you are as an individual, and if one has a sense of who they are as an individual, then one can apportion out one's time, one's energy, one's talents into the intellectual realm, into the realm of pursuit of honor, pursuit of power, pursuit of pleasure. But if they're all done knowing yourself, so then you'll never have the problem that one will overpower the other, because you always have the concept of self to keep you in check. And that's the key. If you know where you're at in life, so then anytime you get a little bit too carried away, so you have that little self knocking on you and saying, that's not really a correct parallel and identification of who you are. Before we continue with this thought, to share a short story, which I think on a certain level portrays this idea of a sense of self and a sense of knowing self. It's a story that's brought in one of the Magid books by Rabbi Krohn, of a family that came to the Lower East Side in the early 1900s. I'm sure many people sitting here can trace their roots back to that period of time. And we know it was a very difficult time, where you had a job for 6 days and then every seventh day you were looking for new work. And as for Moshe Feinstein, that sound notes very often in his work, Drash Moshe, that if a parent would say, "Oy, I lost my job again for this Shabbos," so then the children generally did not continue religious. But if one would say, an opportunity to lose my job for Shabbos, everything is worth Shabbos, a different perspective, so then more times the children would remain religious, because they understood the priority and the love, and the simcha, as he notes, the joy for a mitzvah. Anyway, getting back to our story, there was a man who came to the Lower East Side to look for work, and then he would bring over his family. World War I broke out in the middle, so it was many years till he could bring over his whole family, and they finally came out. And the mother, the very next day after she arrives over the boat, so to speak, onto the Lower East Side, realizes immediately, sums up the situation, and says the only hope for our children is to enroll, at that time the oldest, with a 9-year-old boy, to enroll him in yeshiva. So she went to the yeshiva, and she said, I'm ready to enroll my son. And he said, that's very nice, but we have absolutely no room in the yeshiva. She said, no problem, my son will share a desk. He says, you're welcome to walk into any classroom. Everyone is sharing desks. Everyone is sharing books. Everyone is sharing sidurim. We're just overloaded by the amount of immigrants. So she said, well, how long will I have to wait? He says, 2 years. She says, okay. She went home, took her son, came back to the yeshiva and sat on the steps. And just waited there. She was sewing and he was counting the cards. And the recess came out and one of the rabbis saw them and said, what are you doing? She says, I'm waiting. Okay. He sees her at the end of the day and says, what are you waiting for? She says, I'm waiting to get my son into the yeshiva. The rabbi goes into the principal and says, you know, this lady's waiting. Because I know this lady's waiting, but she's going to have to wait because there's no room. Well, she waited that day and she waited the next day and she came back the next day with her son. Well, by the third day, they found room for her son in the yeshiva. I guess it's better than this woman sitting outside sewing all day. The end of the story is that Rabbi Kroll mentions is he said he heard this story from Rabbi Avi Gold, who's a personality in Jewish education, who was the grandson of this woman. And he notes that all of this woman's children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren are religious to this day. And this is the concept, which I think on a certain level is if you know yourself and you know what your direction is in life, so then you can be a very focused person. You know what you want to accomplish. You know how you will get that which you want to accomplish. And then everything else is going to fit into perspective if one is a focused person. And I think that this is what we're trying to speak about on the concept of levado, means a centered person, a person who has an identity, who understands what it is that makes them unique, what it is that makes them a human. Then they're able to take the different aspects and different drives in a person, and through the concept of bechira, through the concept of free choice, saying I'm going to live a life where I know that which I need to do and when I need to do it, and not lose the concept of self. And if one gets off balance, so then the self is going to constantly put a person in check. Now, here comes the problem. The problem is, what happens if you're not a balanced person and that self begins to fade? And that's why if you continue at 17, the I cannot usurp the self because it's the true self. It cannot go beyond the self because its whole being is selfless. It can, however, as we mentioned, suffer its own form of corruption. It can disappear. That disappearance is experienced as the loss of a sense of selfhood and unitary identity. It happens when the impact and draw of the world outside of us become more powerful than our grasp on the reality of our inner world. This causes the world within to be forgotten. By default, what sense of self remains becomes completely isolated in the shallow sense of our autonomous being. So the problem is that we can get so caught up in the outer world and so caught up in everything we need to do that we don't focus in on self. And if you don't focus in on self and you don't focus in on priorities and what defines a person as a person, so then the self is going to disappear. 18, our ability to forget our own essence stems from the weakening grip on spirit we've been discussing. Our sense of the reality of our inner life fades as our attention is increasingly focused on external physical reality. Our successful manipulation of nature further bolsters our sense of the intrinsic reality of the external physical world, as does our constant involvement with it. Our inner world quickly vanishes into the forgotten recesses of our mind. Now, what happens here? What happens here is when we start slipping in self, we have nothing to hold us in check. Because while in the three other areas what held us in check was self, well, what's going to hold us in check if we have no self? And that's why in the end of 20, in this case, it is the self which is disappearing. There is no ground on which to stand. All three inclinations flood in to fill the void, kept in partial check only by their conflicting interests. The very self has been forgotten. So what brings us back to self if we lose self and we don't have self to bring us back to self? Does that make any sense? So he says, and this is very powerful, 21, in this most lonely of struggles, we have a paradoxical ally. As this emptiness fills us and our world, we are confronted by the specter of non-being, the abyss. The abject terror of non-being, which we confront due to this loss of self and loss of meaning, focuses our attention on precisely what it is that we fear losing ourselves. Cutting through all the mediums of expression, we discover our cowering self, our identity, the unity which lies beyond the desire for pleasure, power, and honor. This is the aspect of self which connects with the unitary creator and is one and the same with recovering faith and a sense of meaning in the world. So what brings us back to self, paradoxically, the ground you're standing on. When you have that feeling, we can appreciate that in California, perhaps on a physical level, when you have that feeling of losing the ground you're standing on, that fear is what brings a person back to say, hey, let that fear be the check of self to bring us back to self, to bring us back to relationship, through self, to God. Till now we've spoken about levado on a personal level, that every individual needs to find this balance of self, this centered aspect. What I'd like to suggest is that this was really the battle between Yaakov and the angel. What the angel, what Esav represents, is that we should lose our sense of self. And Esav, which is Roman society, which is the Western civilization today, goal is to lose the sense of self. And if you lose the sense of self, so then the glitter of Hollywood, and the billboards of Hollywood, and everything that they represent will be able to pull a person away from self. And by pulling a person away from self, one's pulled away from godliness. Let's talk about this concept for a number of moments. We know that there were four kingdoms that have ruled the Jewish people throughout history. It's very appropriate. Hanukkah is coming up soon. They're listed in source 22. Babylonia, Persia, Greece, and Rome all developed sophisticated and multifaceted civilizations. They each had a primary strength, however, which was revealed in the aspect which projected outward, vanquishing its neighbor. Now, each one of these tried to work on a different aspect that we've been speaking about today. The Jews were conquered by Babylonians, ruled by a desire for power. Persians motivated by a desire for pleasure, and Greeks wanting honor and the power of knowledge. So all of these different nations were really trying to vie for one of these elements that's found within us and to take it to the extreme. The Romans were driven by a shallowness and insecurity which expressed itself in overlording and barbarous destruction. And it's very interesting to know, and I found this very fascinating, that we find these four nations hinted at in the four non-kosher animals that are listed in the Torah. Now, we know that there are two, and this is the next page, source 24. This comes from The Juggler and the King, by Aaron Feldman's book. We know that a kosher animal has two signs of kashrut. It chews its cud, and its hooves are cloven. Now, these two signs have a common element. They're a clear indication that this is not a beast of prey, and that it's content with its lot. And we know we are what we eat, and therefore it's important to eat the correct animals. A hunting animal does not chew its cud, since it eats no vegetable matter, and the meat is easily digestible. Once the prey is digestible, the predator seeks new food. So it's not happy with that which it has, it always needs to find more. And likewise, a hunting animal possesses claws with which to tear its victims apart. A kosher animal satisfied with the food its creator brings forth for it from the ground, having no victim, it needs only hooves. And he continues that nearly all non-kosher animals lack both of these signs. The Torah details just four animals that have one sign but lack the other. Until today, they haven't found to be proven otherwise. That all animals lack both signs except four, which have one but not the other. And they are the camel, the rabbit, the hare, and the pig. The first three chew their cud but do not have cloven hooves. The last, the pig, has cloven hooves but did not chew its cud. What does this mean? So we say they really represent four forms of spiritual impurity. The first three animals have the internal sign of kashrut, but not the external one. Thus, they represent the various manifestations of a frustrated spiritual nature when one's own inner essence is amenable to holiness, but is prevented from realizing itself by one's inappropriate external behavior. And the parallel, how each one of these animals reflects a different one of these nations, but the common thread is, and it's a beautiful understanding, is that all three nations were okay on the inside. It means they wanted to have a relationship with God. What happened? It was an outer sign that was the problem. It means it was an outer manifestation that was lacking. Rome, however, is different. 21. Rome, however, is totally barren. That's the shelf. Though it has a cloven hoof, all the external trappings of a just society, there is no internal connection to depth of being. It does not chew the cud. Like the pig, which eats endlessly, the Roman citizen is fundamentally unsatisfied. Cut off from the transcendent source of being, his self, a finite unity, he endlessly consumes as he attempts to fill the void resulting from a complete lack of any internal sense of greatness. What marks the Roman society? On the outside, we live in a very just society. But what is it lacking? It's lacking the inner sign. It's lacking that inner connection to some type of depth, some type of sense of values. And we know in our own society that there's a real struggle for this. Since it's not inherent in society, people realize that this is a void, this is a lack. This really reflects what Esav, what the society around us is all about. We see it in our parsha as well. When Yaakov Avinu insists that Esav should take the gifts, so Esav says, no, I don't want to take the gifts. And what does he respond? He responds, Yesh li rav, I have a lot. You know what I have a lot means? I can use a lot more. I have a lot, I have much. But I always have room for more. And what happens? He takes the gifts. What does Yaakov respond about his wealth? He says something different. He says, Yesh li kol. I have everything. And as the Sfasemis points out in Source 30, what does that mean? Does he have everything? No. But if you have the ability to connect everything you have to a transcendent source, so then you have everything. It's the ability to put everything into perspective. And that's why in conclusion of this first section, and then we'll answer some of our questions and then move to the practical realm, the Roman society 31, of which we are a part, is marked off by a lack of connection to the Creator from without, a lack of connection to true unity from within, an inability to sense vitality in the expression of the Creator into reality, and a fading of the physical realm's capacity to reflect its spiritual underpinnings. Rome both eradicates the true self and destroys reality as an environment in which to develop that self. It is within such a context we are challenged to create ourselves. And that's why I think if we would look at the questions that we asked originally, I think we can answer a lot of these questions at this point. The struggle of Yaakov and this angel is really a struggle of levado. Levado means a sense of self, a sense of being a centered person, a balanced person, the concept of uniqueness, the concept of oneness, which parallels God. Esav, or the Saroshal Esav, is fighting this exact point. We don't want you to be a levado. We don't want you to be focused in on self. We want to have the outer trappings so great that you're going to lose that sense of self. And that was what the struggle was all about. And that's why symbolically the struggle is reflected in the fact that he injures him at really the hip bone, which the Mefarshim, the commentaries explain, is the part that really connects the upper and lower parts of a person, which on the way we're understanding and on a deeper level is the connection of all aspects within a person. The lower part, the physical part, are the parts of the drives of a person, drive for the physical power, physical pleasures, power, honor, intellectual drive, with the upper part, which is understood as the more spiritual part of a person. What he wants to do is to have these two parts disjointed, to try to create a split within these two parts. And that's why it's no accident that it is within the animal that we're not allowed to eat this, because what does the animal represent? It represents our animal desires. It's within the animal that we have to say, step back and understand that we are not an animal. We are not going to allow our sense of self to be so overcome by this that as we begin with, we are really splintered selves. and that we really are manifesting different acts of animal behavior in everything that we do, and being a reactive type of person in everything we do. Not eating it in the animal is teaching us to be able to step back and say we are above the animal, we have the ability to make free choice, and we have the ability to be able to temper the animal drives within us in a sense of self. I think that's why, as well, it's at this point that Yaakov gets the name Yisrael. Because as the Klayakar explains, Yisrael means Yashar Kel, to be able to see God. If a person has the ability to be Levada, and he's able to really overcome this battle, by overcoming this battle, he's able to have the sense of Levada, which then leads the person, if you have the concept of self, to the concept of godliness. To be the vehicle, once you are a balanced person, a centered person, to then bring it into the spiritual realm, to be a platform to see God. So when Yaakov Avinu is tested on this level of Adav, and is successful on this level, so then he's able to have the ability to be given the name Yisrael. You have now the ability to see God, to be at one with God. Where does that leave us today? I mean, how do we work into this level of Levada? So that's not an easy question. So I'd like to try to offer, in the time that we have remaining, a number of approaches. We have in the Parsha, when Yaakov, after this meeting, comes to the city of Shechem, so the verse tells us that Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. Yaakov came Shalem, whole, intact, to the city of Shechem. And as Rashi points out, wrote in Source 33, the article of Stone Chumash, that he was intact both physically, financially, as well as spiritually. And as the Shemi Shmuel points out, that these are really the four parts of the Merkava. It's really the four parts we've been speaking about today, where you have the different aspects of a person. And the fourth part of the Merkava, as the Shemi Shmuel explains, is the Tzelem Elokim, is a divine image, which is the sense to take all the other parts of a person and have them focus. These parts that we've been speaking about, the drive for physical pleasures, for power, for honor, for intellectual abilities, are really all found within a very famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And I think it's in this Mishnah, or rather the Maharal and Derech HaChaim's understanding of this Mishnah, that I think will give us approach number one, how to reach this level of levado, a sense of self. Very famous Mishnah, first in the fourth chapter, Ezu Chacham Halomei Mikol Adam, who is wise, he who learns from all men, who is mighty, he who conquers his evil inclination, who is rich, he who rejoices with his portion, who is worthy of honor, he who honors his fellow men. We're all familiar with this Mishnah. So explains the Maharal, and here's quoted by Rabbi Rucham in Das Torah, and this is sources 37 through 41, which will summarize. He says, it's very fascinating to note all the different aspects of this Mishnah. It doesn't say who is wise, he who has a great teacher. That's what should make a person wise. No. Or someone who has a great, good education. All of these have one common denominator, and that is you have the ability to access all four of these levels independently, not needing the help of anybody else. Who is wise? So if I say, well, I need a good teacher, but we know those are good, they're hard to come by these days, so I say I can never be wise. No. Who is wise? If you have the desire to learn, then you're wise. You can go out into the marketplace and look around you and derive a tremendous amount of wisdom. Experiences between people, you can derive a tremendous amount of wisdom. If you have the inner desire to be wise, you'll be able to be successful. Who is strong? So if I say someone strong has to be physical strength, well, if I'm a little shlemiel and everyone beats up on me, so I can never be strong. Well, you know, that's the way life is. No. It's not dependent on another person, and my power has to be measured against another person's power. No. The power is dependent on self. Am I able to overcome my inclination? That's the concept of power. Likewise, it's the concept of being honored. Again, I'm a little shlemiel. Nobody honors me. I live my whole life. I feel, So then no one's going to honor me, so I'll never be an honorable person? No, it's not dependent on whether someone else honors me. What is it dependent on? Whether I can give honors to others. If I have a sense of what honor is all about and I give it to others, then I become an honorable person. And likewise with wealth. Is wealth only dependent on, you know, measuring how much I have against what someone else has? Well, I'll tell you right now, I'll never have enough. That's bottom line. What is wealth dependent on? My ability to view, what Yaakov Avinu says, Yeshli Kol, my ability to view that which I have as being everything that I need and being satisfied with my lot. This, says Rabbi Yerucham, is really what the concept of Levado means. A person does not need to be dependent on somebody else to define who they are as a person. Levado is a sense of having the ability to know yourself and to gauge things based on yourself. If we walk through life always craning our shoulders and looking over our shoulders what other people have, and this is what that person's like, and this is how smart that person is, and this is what this one's talents are, so I'm never myself. All I am is reacting to others. Self means the ability to see myself as an individual and to accomplish in life based on who I am and not based on what other people perceive me as. And that explains, I think, what Rav Wolbe says in Alei Shur, in Source 44, that a person needs to say, it's a very famous statement of our rabbis in Sanhedrin, Bishvili nivra ha'olam, that for me the world was created. Which is the concept, he explains, that no person from the beginning of time until the end of time will be like me. Nobody. I'm an individual. I'm an individual. So let me understand what that means. Let me take a look at myself. Let me know myself. Let me realize that there must be something about me that made God create me, because there's going to be no other me but me. If there's going to be another me, so I say, okay, if I mess up, so someone else will take over what I missed, because he's going to be another me. But there is no other me. If there's no other me but me, so therefore I have to be me. What does it mean to be me? It means to be levado. It means to have a sense of self. It means to know who I am. And the gauge to do this, and I've wrote this before Rosh Hashanah in the Elul series, where Rav Wolbe says you want to know the gauge to know what yourself is all about. He says it's the ability to be alone with oneself. And he quotes a very, very perplexing Mishnah Pirkei Avos, which says in 45, Haneor Balaila, one is awake at night, Bamahalech Baderech Yechidi, and he walks alone at night, Umifaneli Bola Batala, and he turns his mind off to just wandering. Hareza Mitchayev Benafsho, he's worthy of destroying his soul. So one who just wanders around and thinks about really nothing, he's Mitchayev Benafsho. What does this mean? So he says the following, Halo Sha'ak Hazot Hi Eit Ratzon, the time that you're alone with yourself, late at night, is really a time of Ratzon, a very special time. How could you at that time just be thinking about have your thoughts wandering? What should you be thinking about? You should be able to be thinking about yourself. He says, at a time like that, you have to have the ability to think about self. And he says, this is really, and I think it's a powerful gauge for all of us. Late at night, kids are sleeping, all that which I was going to accomplish today has to have been done. You know, you're at your limit. House is pitch dark, it's quiet. So you say you want to relax a couple minutes before you go to sleep. Which is great. If a person does not have the ability to at that point say, well, let me sit down and talk to myself. But rather, they say, I want to read a book. I want to put on the late night show. I'm going to turn on the radio. I don't care what it is. And I'm not saying one can't do that. What I'm saying is, if you don't have the ability to at that point say what? Let me talk to myself. Let me get into the car and not immediately flip on the radio or on the tape deck. And let me just have time with myself and to get to know myself. If you don't have the ability to do that, that's a sure sign that you're not living a levado existence. You're not living a centered, balanced life where you know yourself, because you're afraid of yourself. So I think that this, on a certain level, is a path for us in this construct that Yaakov Avinu created for us. What Yaakov Avinu is saying is that if you're going to battle the world outside of us, you have to be both an individual as well as a nation, a sense of levado. You have to know yourself. Because if you're not going to know yourself, you're going to be easily swayed and pulled by the different parts within you and within the society around you. But the key in life is to have a sense of self, know what one's priorities are in life, knows what one's direction is in life, to have a real sense of what a person is all about. And in so doing, that no matter what comes across a person's path, they are not going to be influenced and swayed and overcome by these obstacles, but rather have that sense of inner security, that sense of self, the sense of levado that's going to be able to keep their lives in balance and in perspective. And it's ultimately that level that's going to bring a person to a closer relationship with God. And that's the concept at this point that he gets the name Yisrael, to be able to see God, because it's through levado, it's through the uniqueness that we have a relationship with God.